was thinking as he was going through some of that prayer, the uniqueness of some of that, the differences of all of us, the backgrounds that of people that God calls and puts together as his family, the things we learn from that are inspiring and exciting, and also the ability to have a oneness and spirit unity because of technology that God has given us in this end time with websites, with internet, and so forth. It really is an incredible thing that God has given to us, and all for great purpose and all for great reason. Okay, I finally got the date settled for Los Angeles and Phoenix, so it's on the website, but I wanted to make the announcement here today for anyone out there that doesn't have the internet or hasn't seen it on the website. But again, Laura and I will be in Los Angeles, California area, in the area there on January 10th, on that Sabbath, and then in Phoenix, Arizona area on the 24th of January. So we're looking forward to the opportunity of meeting new people in both areas that we haven't met before. And thought I'd also mention that I wanted to say hello to them as well, to all the group meeting in Orlando, Florida today, because Johnny and Myrtle Harrell are down there, evangelists serving in that area right now. This weekend, they were up in West Virginia or Carolinas last week, and I forgot to post that because when they go out, I've been trying to remember to put that on the system there, but I was had other things, I guess, on my mind there after getting back and trying to catch up. But anyway, I guess everyone pretty well knew it in the Florida area. But anyway, I'll try to make sure that I post those things in the future so that people in the area can know when someone's coming into the area, besides my wife and myself. Also, this is rather late notice, but I feel an urgency, a need for this, and that is a church fast next Sabbath. Okay? So I'm sorry for the late notice of this, but just came to me, so this is when it's going to be done. If you already have plans and so forth, I know this is late, and a lot of people do have family plans and things of that nature, it's fine if you do it beforehand or afterward. This is not a holy day. It is not a required thing in the sense of a specific date, a specific time, but it is a time as a whole that we'll be doing it within Canada and the United States because of everyone being able to hear it today. Obviously, for people in Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and so forth, because they're not hearing it today, although some are, they do get up and listen to it in the mornings. But over there in Australia and New Zealand. But I wanted to mention for them, they don't have to do it on the Sabbath, but whenever you hear the announcement, you can do it at any time you choose. But hopefully within the next couple of weeks, you can do it on the Sabbath or you can do it during the week, Sunday, whatever. Same thing with people here who already have plans. If you already have plans, you already have plans. And again, it's not like the Day of Atonement. You know, you can start a fast earlier than the Sabbath if you want and quit partway into the Sabbath if you want. I think we had one at one time here where we had started, we had a fast and we planned it so that we'd be able to, I think, have a meal somewhere, wherever it was. It was here, I think it was here in Detroit area, yeah. So again, it's very flexible, but it's something we need to do as a church in the times we live in and so forth. And it'd be expedient upon all of us, obviously, to do that and participate. But as a whole, I hope to get through this sermon today. I was going to have more than one part, but I think I can do it today if I get into the sermon. Complete this sermon today, and we'll have a different sermon relating to the purpose of the fast next Sabbath. We have a lot of new people who haven't shared this opportunity with us in the same way as we have done over the years, because I'd say every year we've had at least one fast for the church, other than the Day of Atonement, obviously, and be talking about that next Sabbath. So with that, I think I've said everything I needed to say for today. Announcements. We are in Detroit. I don't know if I said that or not. Just let everyone out there can know. Really a good-sized group here today. Of course, again, reaching from far and wide all the way up to Toronto area. And north of Toronto, a couple hours north of Toronto area? Yeah, it's all the way down to here. That's amazing. So it's good to see all the group together here today. And the temperature, can you believe that one? That's even better. We weren't going to come up here if it was going to be like it was one time when our vehicle wouldn't even start down there in Dundee. One time we got out of services and it was so cold out there, vehicle wouldn't even start. We were stranded in the area for a while. But anyway, people in the church, as always do, helped out and helped us through that bit of a mess. But I have no desire to go north when it's that cold. So you'll not be seeing us probably if it gets really cold. What is it today? You're going to get up to 65, they said? Oh, amazing. Phew. Of course, it doesn't last long. Oh. Last Sabbath, we started a new series, sermon series, entitled God's Witness is Ending, and today is part two. And if everything goes well, it will be the last part of this series. As we discussed last week, the book titled 2008, God's Final Witness, is indeed very significant, as the entire year of 2008 is a final witness about mankind to mankind. And this entire year has been a final great witness of mankind and its attitude toward God. That is incredible when we understand what God has given to us, to understand what's taking place, to understand why God is doing it this way as well. So again, God has given one year, the year of 2008, as a time that sums up the past 6,000 years. And then it's time for us to enter into great tribulation. It was pointed out to me a couple of times within this past week about what is written in the last page of the book, and I want to start there by reading that today. When this book is published at the end of summer in 2006, with distribution in full swing in the fall, I think it took a little bit longer to get it in full swing, but anyway, sometimes all the plans with printing books and so forth doesn't go exactly as you want to. But anyway, it says there will be a maximum time of 2 years remaining before the world will be plunged into the worst time of all human history. And that doesn't mean that everyone sees it and understands it. Because of what's happening economically around the world, we've already been plunged into it. It's just the world doesn't know it yet. They don't understand that yet. They don't grasp what's taking place around them. They have the idea, the mindset, and understandably so, because they don't know the times we live in. They don't know what's happening in the world. They have a hope, and they hope that it's soon that the world is going to be able to come out of this time. Just like the Great Depression that this country and parts of the world experienced another time. And this time isn't like that. This is totally different. And it is incredible what you hear in the news. Retail stores now wanting to hand out. You know, if the auto industry can get it, different ones lining up, and some other companies can get it, why not us? I heard someone else saying casinos in some areas. They're wanting help, you know, because shame if they go under. You know, different things that are out here that people are doing. You think, where does it end? And what was it? Retailers are wanting some special things given to them that at certain times it's tax-free. You think, yeah, I'm sure the states are going to go along with that one. The federal government's going to love that one, too. Just make everything, you know, keep printing money and less taxes. It sounds like a working combination. The world's so foolish. And things that are going on in the world are truly foolish. And it's a sick spiral. But the world hasn't awakened to it yet, and they won't for a while. That's what's amazing. To understand we're going to go into some time here, and people just aren't going to understand what's taking place. So that time has begun. The world has been plunged into it. It's just as so many things that so often happen when it comes to God and God's way of life, they don't see it. They don't understand it. It's like what happened to us in the church back in 1994. We didn't grasp what we'd been plunged into. We were plunged into great spiritual tribulation, and it took us a long time before God finally helped us to understand we are indeed in great tribulation in the church as far as the church is concerned. And that had to do with the seals of Revelation already being open. But it took us a while to see and to understand that. And it's the same way with the world. The world can't see and understand either. It's going to take a lot before they'll begin to be able to see. So again, that time has begun with the beginning of a total economic meltdown, global economic meltdown. And with the first trumpet being blown. Going on in the book there, the next paragraph. By the fall of 2008, the United States will have collapsed as a world power, or it will have begun its collapse. And please, please again understand exactly why some of these things are said. It still goes back to the 50th truth and what we believe previous to this. So some may get a little upset and say, you mean everything is postponed by 8 months? If it is, so be it. I'm not in control. I'm not in charge. Okay? Things did change. And it did affect some things and why they were written in the book. If people want to get upset at me in some of those cases, so be it. I can't help it. You know? And if that shakes your faith, I can't help that either. We're all each individually answerable for what we do and how we respond and what we do. And I hope we learned the lessons back in April, May, especially by the time we got to June and by the time we had that sermon. Because we had some major things in the church that we needed to understand and grasp about ourselves. and to learn some major lessons ourselves about pride, our pride, and how we're taking some of these things. This isn't about us. We are blessed to be a part of something awesome in this world. We truly are. This is not about us and how well we look through all of this. On the contrary, God's prophets and God's people have never been up in the forefront of being made to look good. Say, on the contrary, indeed, we have great lessons to learn, and we learn through the process. So be it. If we can learn through that, if we can be made richer and stronger spiritually because of those things, then that's excellent in every way. As I've said so many times, I wouldn't trade one trial, one hardship in the last 15 years we've gone through in the church, which has actually been longer for my wife and myself, and things we've experienced because we were being trained for something long before it ever happened in 1994 that we didn't even realize because of some hardships and difficulties and battles we were having in a spirit world, because of a spirit world that I had to learn lessons about, and also because of what people can do, what people are capable of doing, even with God's Spirit. You know, the betrayals and the lies and the distortions and those things, there are things we've got to make sure that never happen in our life, say, and that we've learned what we need to learn so we can continue to go forward. So again, by the fall of 2008, the United States will have collapsed as a world power, or it will have begun its collapse, and it has begun its collapse big times, economically, everything, everything is being ripped out of underneath us as far as the value, the strength, the power of a dollar. Even there for a time, look at the world, what happened. The euro started coming down and came way down, and people were looking to the dollar. They're looking to the United States to save them. And now that's starting to change again. They're realizing this is bigger. And now things are starting to change. They don't know what to do out here. They really don't know what to do. I marvel at oil. I still do. And how that affects attitudes. Putin isn't a real happy camper. I hope you've seen some of the news about him and what he feels and what he thinks about some of these things. These things are changing the minds of leaders in the world and how they're going to respond to the things that happen over the following year here. They truly are. Setting the world stage. It is incredible what we are already witnessing, what we're already seeing. I'll get through this paragraph. By the fall of 2008, the United States will have collapsed as a world power, or it will have begun to collapse and no longer exist as an independent nation within 6 months after that time. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to stick to it or whether it's going to be a delay of 8 months because of everything that was written based on what we knew about the return of Jesus Christ at one point in time. So we'll have to wait and see. Doesn't bother me. Doesn't shake me, and I hope it doesn't shake you. There is a marginal six-month window of time that God has not yet revealed concerning this specific moment in time. Wow. And I have commented in times past, 6 to 9 months. I've said it many times in sermons, that there's a 6 to 9 month period that God has not revealed fully. And then God revealed it. Does that affect these things? Well, it sure has affected a lot of things already. Going on, this will be revealed sometime soon after the distribution of this book begins. Well, soon. That's another one people can look at. You know, if people are looking for a fault and looking for, if their motivation is finding something wrong, they're going to find it. Okay? You want to talk about 2 years being soon? In the scheme of things we've gone through, it's to me, that's soon still. Fits in the category of soon. 6,000 years, it really fits in the category of soon. Anyway, going on. Well, I've already addressed about the 8 months. But anyway, I wanted to read that here today because my answer, candidly, in some of these things is I don't know. I don't know. How much plainer can I put it? There are things that God is just not going to show until it's time. You want more from me than that? Anybody in the church? I can't give it to you. Okay, this isn't up to me. This is up to God and how He does it in Jesus Christ. They're the ones leading and guiding and directing the church. Going on here. So when it has all been laid out, everything has been affected by the change of 8 months that we now understand as a matter of a change of the return of Jesus Christ not being on trumpets but on Pentecost. That changed everything. How much some of these things will be, I don't know. Just like president taking office. I'm still waiting to see. I don't know. Is it going to happen? Isn't it? Is God going to? It's just like on the, I marvel even at that. Some of the things on the website as far as why we have, I have not touched, I have not edited, and we have left them all on, the interviews. If someone is, if God is drawing someone, they're going to work through those things. They're going to understand. They're going to understand perfectly well what has happened. Now, if somebody's having difficulties and they have a wrong spirit or wrong attitude or they're looking for a fault, they can have a field day. They can have a field day. To me, it wouldn't be truthful. To me, it wouldn't be right to remove those at all. You know, we need to be able to understand our history. That's a part of our history. It truly is. And if people need to have access to that to see how God leads and guides and directs the church. It's God's work. It's not our work. So before we continue on reading chapter 4 where we left off of the book, as I started doing last Sabbath, I think it'd be good to pause here and discuss a little more about the opening of the seventh seal, because I left part of that sermon loose. And so again, I think it'd be good to go back and talk about the first trumpet that was blown on December the 14th, the beginning of a countdown of 1260 days. Let's go back there. Revelation chapter 8. And then we'll get to the thunders and talk about those that are in the book that we'll be coming up to quickly. I'm not going to read everything in the book, obviously, in that chapter. But Revelation chapter 8 and verse 7. So the first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. Doesn't say it's immediate. Sometimes we want everything to be immediate. Things don't work that way all the time, do they? And they were cast upon the earth. And what does all that mean anyway? And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. And so, as we sometimes do as physical human beings, we want to see everything physical right now. And the first trumpet, as has been said over and over again, is not like that. God showed that a long time ago. The first trumpet is not like that. And the second angel sounded, as it were, a great mountain burning with fire, was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. And, as has been said for a long time, from that point forward, people will be able to see. You'll know. You won't be living by faith in the way you are now, in the same way that you are now. Right? In Hebrews, when it talks about faith, and it talks about things you look toward, or things you believe, and the confidence you have, that's without seeing any evidence whatsoever. When people begin to see evidence, especially in the world, that's how God's going to begin drawing a lot of people. But it starts out slowly, and it continues to build up until we're through the first four trumpets. I think it'd be good to interject or talk about some other verses here at this point before I make some comments about the trees and about the green grass. Because this is twofold in this revelation. It has to do with something in the spirit, something, some things in the spirit world, and it has some things to do physically in this world. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 3. To understand, the first trumpet is all about judgment. The beginning of judgment. The first trumpet announced to the church and to the world, but the world is oblivious to it. Doesn't listen, doesn't care to listen. That's the witness of 2008 anyway, and 6,000 years. But 1260 days is a time of judgment. Do you realize that the time spoken of in judgment over and over and over again in scriptures, so often when we read those things, I think in the church we have tended to think that that's talking only about the great white throne. And it isn't. Most of those have nothing to do with the great white throne. They truly don't. But it has to do with the judgment that God was going to bring upon the earth at a point in time concerning all mankind, concerning all humanity, and very much like what happened with the flood. And so scriptures spoken of later on that have to do with the end time, a time of judgment that's going to come upon the earth, reflects mankind, reflects all the history of mankind. What we've already entered into is about judgment. It truly is. In a very powerful way on the earth, all mankind, and what's going to happen with mankind. Because God is taking away man's rule of himself. He is taking away Satan and the demons from having any rule any longer. And they've had it for millions of years here. Sorry. And so God is removing all of that. And it is about judgment upon the spirit world, and it is about judgment upon mankind. That man's government, man's ways must come to an end. All the evil, all the filth, all the sickness, all the prejudices in the world, the way people treat each other, you know, just by living in a different part of the country, or by being a different color, or speaking a different language, it is sick. It truly is sick. Went to watch a movie the other night called The Australian. Already know much of the history of Australia there and the Aborigines and so forth, but it doesn't matter where you look in the world. It doesn't matter where you look at different peoples and how people have looked down upon others and how that there have always been some and some societies who are the elite and they're better than everybody else. Even in government, they know what's best for you. That's the way it was in United. The leadership knew what was best for everybody. You know, it wasn't a matter of being led by God and doing things God's way. It was an attitude that is wrong. This filled with sin. And thank God, all that garbage and all that filth is about to be ended. The ugliness of human beings and how they treat each other, have had wars, kill each other, you know, over such simple little things in life, ugly things in the human mind. So anyway, I'm so glad we're at the end of this all. I truly am with all of my being. And I feel that most of us share the same sentiment, the same desire. I don't know how great that is because that'll become greater in you as you go through this time of 3.5 years. We're going to learn to loathe the nature of man, the ugliness of mankind. We have not lived as a whole, this generation, to see the atrocities of human beings and how ugly, how sick, how filthy, perverted human beings can be toward each other. We truly haven't seen that as a whole. Some people in different ages and different times have seen those things. Anyway, again, the first trumpet is about the beginning of judgment. Final judgment. Man's judgment. Sorry. And people in the great white throne of the millennium are going to learn great lessons about this judgment that God brings upon the earth. The last day of all this is about great and powerful judgment that comes from God Almighty Himself to change it all. Because in one day, He takes power away from Europe and from China and from Russia, and He destroys millions of people. A few hundred million in one day. And there is no other way for God's kingdom to come and for this world to be changed, and for the attitude and spirit of all nations to be brought low, except that it happened exactly the way God's doing it. God is perfect in all of His ways, and He knows exactly how to deal with mankind. It is awesome to understand. Matthew chapter 3 and verse 10. And now also, Christ speaking, and now also the axe is laid unto the root of the trees. What's it talking about? Therefore, every tree which does not bring forth good fruit is hewn down, cut down, and cast into the fire. You think what's getting ready to happen at the end of this age is not about what God says is going to happen to mankind, about the trees, about human beings, and a time of judgment has come, and what's going to take place in people's lives, and that people are going to be destroyed because they will not turn to God, they will fight against God to the very end? It's very much about a time of judgment. We've already entered into it. Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 17. Even so, every good tree brings forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree brings forth evil fruit. What kind of trees do we have in this world? Corrupt. Corrupt. Evil. The nature of man. Oh, it is so filthy, so evil, so sick. It truly is. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither does a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that does not bring forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. This isn't just about a time at the end of 100 years of what's going to take place on the earth. It's about a time that God wants us to understand what we're entering into now. And how He's going to deal with mankind because of a witness of the way mankind has been for 6,000 years. In the book of Ezekiel, and other places in the Bible as well, but especially in the book of Ezekiel, uses green trees prophetically to refer to specific kinds of judgment that God brings. interesting when you go back and read some of those things, and it's equated with God's judgment and what He does to people, not to trees. See, so when we read something like that about the first trumpet, oh, do we want to hear this? You know, and things that have been said in the past, oh, they're spiritualizing everything away. The first seal, the second seal, the third seal, the fourth seal, it's all spiritualized away. It's not about physical things they're saying, it's about the church. Yeah, that's right. It's a reality. And there's some things here that are very spiritual in nature and what God is doing with mankind. But it will also have physical ramifications as well. Just not overnight, not immediately. Right? It'll happen in the second trumpet. It'll happen in the third trumpet. It'll happen with the fourth trumpet. It'll happen with the fifth trumpet. It's going to happen all the way to the end because it's about judgment. It's about what God is going to do. And there will be a repercussion as well because of what Satan and demons do, because of the knowledge and things that they come to see and understand of what God's doing with them as a result of the first trumpet and how they respond and how they destroy people by things that they do. Let's go over to another place here, Revelation chapter 9, where it talks about trees. So notice this place here, it uses green trees, but in a different context than the first trumpet. Totally different, but it's still the use of trees. It's very specific here. And this example is during the time of the fifth trumpet. Let's notice what it says. Revelation 9 and verse 1. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. We know what this is all about. We've talked about it many times. It's written in the book. It's written in many places. It's talking about Europe, finally. It's a revival, final revival of the Holy Roman Empire. One last time. And it's about the power that is given to them. Not until this point in time. They can't have this power. They're not able to do this until this moment in time when the fifth trumpet blows. And then it happens quickly. They come together quickly. And even if they come together and do what they do quickly, then they regret it. They regret having started it. They regret having done it. But you can't take it back once you started it. And then there's a process that begins to happen between a power in Europe and that great church over there. And they begin to have conflict after that. Say, amazing what takes place. It's not a love affair. It is not a love affair at all. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Oh, they're given great power. We know it's military. Mr. Armstrong talked about this so often, understanding full well what some of these things are about. War, great war. The only problem is we thought that war started way back in the first seal, second seal, and third seal. We didn't understand. There weren't enough portions to go around for all that destruction physically on the earth. Verse 4. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men. Think what it's talking about. It's not talking about trees. It's talking about people. But uniquely different this time than that first trumpet. But only those men who have not the seal of God in their foreheads. So there are those that can be affected by this, and there are those who will not be affected in the same way by it. But only those men who have not the seal of God in their foreheads. Who doesn't have the seal of God in their foreheads? This isn't talking about that seal of the 144,000. There's also the use of the term seal in Scripture when it talks about those who have received the impregnation of God's Spirit in their life. All others, in a certain context here, are fair game. But there are those that cannot be touched. You know how God has the power to protect? God has the power to deliver? It's awesome what's being said here. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as a torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. You know what this is mostly about? The church. Those that God is drawing into the church, those who've had the impregnation of God's Spirit long ago, some that God is going to work with and bring through everything. but there are others that can be killed. Well, I'm not going to go into it anymore. I'll tell you more of the story here, but there are those that can be killed on the earth, and there are those who can't be. But it still has a great deal to do with the church, but it's used a little bit differently than it is in the first trumpet there when it talks about judgment. So again here, just to drive the point home today, that what is given here is about judgment, it's about people. And depending on the context, depending upon what God is doing, determines how what the interpretation is and how it's to be used. So again, going back here to the first trumpet. And the third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. So again, understanding what the trees are here in the sense of that which is, well, when we're talking about people, I want to back up here a little bit and talk about green grass a little bit as well. Green grass, in this particular instance, goes along with the trees, but it has to do with prosperity. It has to do with, you know, when you have green grass, especially in olden times when you were brought to a land of plenty and you had plenty of green grass, it was an agrarian society. You weren't in drought. The things you had around you, the wealth you had, it's a part of wealth of the land, the fertility of the land. And this is how it's being used here. God is making it very clear here. Something is going to happen where a third of everything is going to be dealt with, and everything that appears to be their wealth is going to be destroyed. This is a part of exactly what, this is a judgment that God is bringing upon the earth during 1260 days. Slowly but surely it takes place over the entire period of time here. I'm just going to tell you in a nutshell here because I want to continue on here today. It does have to do with demons and Satan. There are things going on in the spirit world that we do not understand. There are things that God is making very clear to Satan and demons. He is taking away their power and only allowing them to exercise power in specific instances, in specific places. But He is doing things with them right now they have not experienced in millions of years to the same degree that they're already starting to experience now, of things that God is doing with them. And they know that. And there are things they're going to do in retaliation to some of these things that's going to have an effect upon other things that are accomplished here to fulfill these verses, even physically in the world, because of their anger, because of their hatred of God and God's people and God's way of life and this world and mankind. You realize what much of their power is going to begin taken away? The more that God reveals Himself, you realize they begin to be stripped of power. You know what their greatest power has been? Deception. Broadcasting to the mind. And what do they broadcast in? I got a dose of it when I was in Egypt. It just drove the point home very powerfully so, that which has existed on the earth long before God even started working with the children of Israel. The twisted, demented, distorted things that being has done, and all of his demons, to twist and distort the minds of human beings, to mock God, to mock God's kingdom, God's power, God's might, and to twist and distort the minds of human beings. You know, when God starts taking that away and opens up the minds of people, they don't have power anymore. Their power, just like it talks about when Paul talks about it, you know, their power, the power they have, the power of death, that's the last enemy that's going to be destroyed. It has a great deal to do with all of this. The power they have because of sin. And when people start repenting and are able to be forgiven of sin, they lose power over human beings. Not a happy time for them. Not a good time for them. There are things they start to experience now in ways they've never experienced it. They've experienced different ones throughout time. 144,000 that God has called and worked with. But when God begins to work more massively with people, and people begin to see, and they begin to... That is something that stirs them up mightily. It truly is. They know their time is coming to an end anyway. But there are other things going on as well. In time we'll learn and God will reveal to us that we don't have to know about. But it's very much about them. A third of that which God made from the very beginning. A third. It's very much about all those who fell or those who turned against God. They didn't fall. They willingly turned against God and followed Satan, followed Lucifer. They became adversaries to God. And God is letting them know more and more, just as He has been the last few months, building up to this more and more, they are going to be stripped of all their power. That's powerful. All of their power. And this is a torment to them. And they believe God. They loathe God. They loathe God's way. But they believe what's coming to pass. And everything that's been made to look to the world, even spiritually, what has the world believed in? All of mankind, unless somebody is called out of it, what is their sense of their wealth? The things that man has built. I don't care whether it be something from the big pyramids, the things that human beings have done to look up to, the massive buildings. That's why I think of 9/11 and New York City and those two great buildings. The things that people look up to with pride. The things we think we've built as far as the nation's concerned or other people have done in their nations. The things they have built up, the wealth they believe they have. They have nothing except what God gave. But even when it comes to that which is spiritual and religious, they think they have great wealth. All the lies that we've just had to live through and some of the sick songs you have to listen to sometimes when you go out shopping. Hate it. I loathe it. You know, all the garbage that's out there. And yet, that's their wealth. And the wealth of this country and the wealth of other countries. The economic system. I don't care what system it has. There are none of them that are right. Every one of them is wrong. Every one of them. Everything has to be changed. There is nothing we're saving out here. And sometimes in the church, I have known of people who have felt like there are things to be saved, even in this country or whatever country people are in. They think there are things in their government and things in their country that need to be saved. Oh, no, they don't. Because they all work against God and against the laws of God. Every single one of them. And so sometimes it's been hard for some people when they've been brought into the church because they have to come to understand there's not a bit of it worth saving, and it's all against God, all contrary to God, even in religions in the world. You know, talking about something here, my wife and I on the way up today, about some who were a part of the church and have left and gone back into the world, and that there are some even within the scattered group that are so asleep that sometimes when they see some of these people that they've gone out, young people have grown up, and they live miserable lives, unhappy lives, because of sin. And then sometimes there are people who get excited when they finally start growing up a little bit and becoming a little more matured. And some of them get excited when they start going to church. I think, how demented is that? I'm talking about any church in the world. You know? Traditional Christianity is so twisted and so distorted. For somebody to look at that and say, that's a good thing because they're cleaning up their life, they're doing better, they have more of a morality about their life. I think, how twisted is the mind to think that that's good? It's better they don't have any of that religion at all, because it's hard to conquer and overcome those things. There are going to be people resurrected in the great white throne. They have to fight for years to get rid of some of that stench and garbage and swill out of their minds so they can start thinking right. Anyway, sometimes we don't realize how bad it really is because we live in it. We live in the cesspool. We live in the swill and the garbage, and we smell it. And sometimes, you know, when you're smelling it, it's like this guy that does all these bad jobs. I got to get a charge out of him sometimes. And going, I don't know if you've seen him, that does these dirty jobs. And I was watching one here the other day, and the stuff was burning his eyes, and I got a charge out of it because, after a while, though, you get used to it. You know, you're in it for so long, and some of these people who are around it all the time, after a while, it does something to the fibers in your nose. No, I'm just kidding. The senses, the hairs in your nose, I don't know. But anyway, people lose all sense of some things. After a while, it's just that's the norm, you know. And that's a good example of the way life is today. It's the norm. But please understand, this is very much about a spirit world. It's also about a physical world. It's just that these things do not happen immediately overnight. And some people get upset. Well, you said that so many tens of thousands are going to die. Yeah, I don't think I said how long it's going to take or when it's going to start or what's going to be the specific cause of it each time either, you know. But people read what they want to read. And for some in God's church, some people have had troubles with some of this. You know, you need to think of it as books of prophecy are written, because there's still things being revealed even in the book that will come out in time, you know, that God has already given. You know, we all need to be strong. We need to fast, too. And we probably ought to do those more often in the church. Not just as a church, something the church calls, but something we need to do more often in our life. Because you're not going through easy times, you know. And I am reminded of how close we came when that sermon was given, the 50th truth, and when God let us have it sooner than later. Because I'll tell you, you may not believe it, but there wouldn't have been much of the church left by trumpets of 2008 if it didn't happen the way it did. See? Because these battles were bigger than us individually. They truly were. And there were a lot of big mistakes made. God is very merciful and He forgives us. But a lot of things were said about me, about my wife, about the truth, that continue to come out. And I'm sometimes dumbfounded, but I'm not dumbfounded. You know. But I realize how close we came. I realize the mercy of God because He's working with the people and He's going to bring us through it if we'll but respond to Him and seek to be strong and seek to draw closer to Him, seek to be at one with Him. So anyway. It's amazing how dangerous things can sometimes be and we don't realize how dangerous they are. Let's pick up where we left off last Sabbath in chapter 4, 2008, God's Final Witness. We'll pick up a couple of paragraphs before to get the context of where we were. Again, talking about the two witnesses. It says, the fire proceeding out of their mouth is symbolic of the power to pronounce exacting judgments upon anyone who would do them harm. And some of that's already started. Whatever the two witnesses pronounce will come to pass. Then later on, God will give divine protection to His two witnesses and to people in the church. This isn't just about us. He will give them great power to not only pronounce how some will suffer for trying to do them harm, but God will also give them power to perform devastating destruction as often as they choose. And as I mentioned last Sabbath, I'm not comfortable with that yet. I'm learning. You know, God is showing me more and more as we go along here. And that's a part of a process. And it's not something where you want to be in any fashion or form, believe me. Page 90. When the seventh seal is opened, the first four trumpets of that seal will announce the final demise of the United States and her closest allies. The opening of this seal will be the beginning of the final 3.5 years of great worldwide tribulation. Before we cover those events, which are the subject of another chapter, we need to look more closely at the events that precede the last seal. Events which are pronounced by seven thunders during the time of the sixth seal. Doesn't mean they're all fulfilled during that time, but that's when it all began. So again, they're pronounced during this time. They begin during this time. And some of them relatively slow, very slow, about the two witnesses. Number six, about God Almighty. That was primarily to the church. It's not to the world yet at all. To those that God is calling and drawing. And that will increase. Going on. Thunder perfectly describes what is happening before the final end-time storm of destruction strikes the earth. Before the final storm. You know, it's related in a couple different ways. It's not just about the trumpets. It's about the thunders that continue on. It is about a storm and the sound you will hear as a result of those things. The final storm will engulf the whole earth for 3.5 years. But as that storm approaches, the rumbling of this thunder will be heard with increasing intensity. So again, it all is going to work together. It truly is. The seven thunders parallel another prophetic analogy that describes this time of the sixth seal. This prophetic period was described earlier as a pregnant woman in labor pain. And so do the trumpets. They describe the same thing. This analogy again is magnified in the revelation of the seven thunders. Page 91. The seven thunders have much to do with how God will reveal His two witnesses. These thunders serve as a prelude to the final tribulation and the great manifestation of the two witnesses. The revelation of the seven thunders. And so there are going to be things continue to happen until this world, and most of this world is not going to be fully awakened in a sense. I think of the church, scattered church, until the fifth trumpet. But there are going to be things happening in the second, third, and fourth that shake this country and shake Ephraim and Manasseh and Israel in a very powerful way. The revelation of the seven thunders has everything to do with the revelation of God's end-time witness about man and God's revelation to His two witnesses to man. Sadly, most will choose to ignore what they hear. The first thunder, terrorism and war are not new to mankind. This has been the way of man for thousands of years, but this terrorism is part of end-time prophecy, and this is what makes it different from all other acts of war. The first thunder is the beginning terror of war for the end time. This is war that's prophetic for the end time. It's specific. In other words, it's different. It's unique because this is the end. And this is not about the events of World War III. There are going to be things that happened before World War III. But all these kinds of things that take place, and sometimes we can become numb to it. Afghanistan, you know, is even, I mentioned in the book here, talking about shock and awe. You know, after a time, we kind of become numb to these things, even within God's church. And different skirmishes that pop up. And you think of how volatile this world is. You know, things that are setting into place. Things about Russia going into Georgia. You know, it's already gone by, and most of us have forgotten about it. And does that have any big effect in our lives? We don't think so. Oh, yes, it does. Now they're threatening Ukraine, speaking more harshly. All these things are working together for what's coming. You know, they're all thundering. Matters of thunder. Pakistan and India. Pakistan sending over 20,000 troops over into the India side now. You know, so, oh, it's just a winter movement. A winter movement. We always do this every winter. This world is so close. It's so volatile right now. It truly is. Russia wants to do more, and she can't. She can't. She's frustrated. You know, if she could, things would happen a little bit differently, a little bit faster, but she can't. She's got to wait. She's got to wait till her and China are giving it together at the same time. They can't do anything before that. The things he wants to build, the nuclear weapons he wants to increase, the things he's trying to... I hope we're reading some of these things, of what's going on over there. Big talk. But he can't do it yet. He's lacking the mullah. He's so upset with the oil and the low price. He can't even produce it at that price. But they got to have money coming in, so they're, it's like a catch-22. It's miserable times over there for him. Poor guy. Sick mind. Believe me, a sick mind who is going to be responsible for the death of millions of people not too long from now. God says when they and China get together, a third of all the earth is destroyed by them. Sick, sick, perverted, filthy, arrogant minds. Truly. Going on, all seven thunders contain things that have occurred on the earth in one way or another ever since man's beginning. Terrorism is not new. Wars are not new. But what is happening now in these seven thunders is new because it's part of end time prophecy. A part of that which continues to escalate and get worse and set everything up in the world. Going on. All these things will lead directly into a final 3.5 years of great physical tribulation on the earth with ever increasing intensity. Throughout the 3.5 years, we're going to see a lot of things increase mightily so as we go into the months ahead of us. The success of Al-Qaeda's terrorist attacks on 9/11 was the beginning of the first thunder. This was the very day that the sixth seal of the book of Revelation was opened. So the events of this day have great biblical and prophetic significance. 93, page 93, talking about Afghanistan again, talking about shock and awe in Iraq, and then coming down to the second thunder. There's another rumbling that's been increasing in intensity over the past couple of years. It is the direct result of a marked increase in destructive power being unleashed by the earth itself. You know, before we even get in this, I still think of all these things that are happening in the world right now, you know, still going on, just like, what was it, yesterday, and Israel going into the Gaza Strip. You know, powder keg. It always has been, but now we're in a different time. Now we're there. The time is upon us. The second thunder is the increasing destruction created by earthquakes over a period of only 2 years. What was it yesterday? Was it yesterday? Fourth anniversary? That great tsunami? You know, people have forgotten about it. And what's life like in that area of the world? Not too good. Just like around New Orleans. Been rebuilt and it's great down there. Yeah, think what a it isn't, you know. All that destruction, insurance companies, all the battles, all the shenanigans, all the lying, all the cheating, all the taking advantage of people that continue to go on. Government, beautiful picture. Again, the second thunder is the increasing destruction generated by earthquakes over a period of only 2 years. And that was some time back. That was before China and some of the other things have happened. And there have been over 400,000 deaths from earthquakes, with several million additional people being displaced. And that's nothing compared to what's getting ready to happen. See, things like this are going to continue on, but they're going to become worse. And it doesn't matter. It's not a matter of the trumpets. This is thunder. The third thunder, in terms of an economic impact on property and even loss of life, one of the most destructive forces that is taking a dramatic turn for the worse is being caused by an escalating change in our weather. Some will argue that the current weather conditions are a reflection of normal cycles of change over time. It is true that the weather follows cycles. Yes, there have always been times of intensity when destructive powers have been unleashed. However, now is different because the destructiveness and change in weather patterns is going to continue to increase dramatically, not following normal patterns. And that's been increasing, and it continues to do so. But that's getting ready to increase that much more. These things are not going to become less. They're going to become more as we go through this period of time, because it all works together, the thunders and the trumpets. They don't stop. The third thunder is a growing destructiveness from weather. The fourth thunder. Each one of the previous... And we get used to these things if we're not careful. We just get used to them. And the news comes on, it's like, every day. And after a while, we're kind of numb to things, because it's just, that's what we're living in. That's just the way it is. It's like, this is the way it's always been. No, it has not. No, it has not. The fourth thunder. Each one of the previous prophetic thunders will have an impact on the fourth thunder. The result of nations fighting terrorism and engaging in war, along with the devastation caused by earthquakes and the destructiveness from weather, will place a greater burden on a crushing global economy. Sorry. The fourth thunder is global economic upheaval. Who could have believed where we would be today in some of this? But this is the primary thing that starts to get people's attention. This is where it primarily all had to start, or at least come to this point in time. The world is entering into a time of final upheaval for the global economy. The stock market cannot continue its masquerade of being healthy and robust while being falsely propped up by positive talk, pseudo-exuberance, and creative forecasting, which some of them still try to do. And they try to have smiles sometimes while on the TV. You know, I marvel at that sometimes. They come on with these fake, lying smiles. They can't tell the truth. They can't believe. They can't talk about what's really in front of them. It's too horrifying. It truly is. The day of reckoning is now on the world's doorstep. Many deeply felt pangs of sickness will reverberate throughout the world as we draw nearer to a huge market crash. Some nations are already indicating a shift from dollar to euro as a better assurance for future stability. Although many in the United States scoff at such a possibility, that is precisely what will happen as confidence in the dollar continues to wane. Well, we're not there yet, are we? How bad does it have to get? With corporate scandals and corruption on an alarming rise, we had no idea. Look at what's been dug up, you know, in the last 2 years. Not to mention ever-ending downsizing, you know. It's dumbfounding what's happening out here. It truly is. What, 500,000 people added to the rosters this last month? You know, unemployment. A lot of people in God's church starting to be affected by unemployment. Have been for some time in some areas. You know, it's not an easy time to go through. But it's going to get a whole lot worse quickly. Not a long time. We don't have to wait too long now. You don't have to wait too long for this one here to become very strong and very powerful, because it's there on our doorstep already. After the first of the year here, not good. With corporate scandals and corruption on an alarming rise, along with a loss of confidence and a sick economy, the United States is drawing nearer to an economic implosion. Colorful forecasts, indifferent management, sleight of hand trickery concerning corporate assets, downsizing, and other corporate gimmickry have reached the point of no return. There will be no bouncing back from the cancerous greed that has nearly choked all life out of free market capitalism.
See, it doesn't work. When it's all said and done, it doesn't work. The only reason it has worked like it has is because God gave His blessings to this nation to be great. And God has taken that away now. And now we see what this produces, and it isn't good.
Going on, add to all this economic woes, all these economic woes, the problem of trade deficits, money manipulation. What do those mean anymore? Trade deficits. Amazing what's happening. Money manipulation.
It's caught up with him. Yeah. Caught up with that one old boy, his $50 billion. It's caught up with a lot of corporations too. You know, caught up with banks. Banks. They're in a whole lot worse shape than we're being told.
I lost my place. Anyway. And a list of other global ailments, and you have a sure formula for a global economic upheaval, the likes of which the world has never seen, and it never has.
It's a global economy now, in ways that it never was before.
The world has experienced times of great economic upheaval, but it has always bounced back in one way or another. This time, there will be no bouncing back because the world will experience a complete economic meltdown to a level which not even the hoarding of gold and silver will solve.
Yeah. See why God talks about throwing silver and gold in the streets? You can't eat it. What's it going to buy? Yeah.
Amazing. So where's our trust?
We, even in God's church, are being tested. Where is our trust? What do we believe? How deeply do we believe it? Is this it? Do we see and grasp and understand where we are in time? Amazing. Because after a while, anything in this world you've trusted in, it's going to be taken away.
Trust has to be in God, very powerfully so.
Our relationship must be very, very close to God. And please, please, please understand, far more than what it has been even. We need that fast, mightily so. And we need to enter into it next Sabbath in a way that we probably haven't ever entered into any other fast in times past. Because when things begin to happen on a greater scale, and they haven't happened on a great scale yet, when they begin to crumble down around our ears, we're going to experience hard times. We're going to experience things that none of you have ever had to live through. Not a one of you have had to ever live through. See? And you want to be very close to your God. You truly do. To have boldness and confidence in a grand scale that only God can give to you through Jesus Christ. Of this way of life, of the truth He's given to us, and to understand that's where our strength is. Him being our high tower, God being our high tower, our Petra is going to take on new meaning in our lives. It truly is.
The fifth thunder going on. The next three thunders have a duality that includes both the Church of God and the world. It has already been explained that the sixth seal is a time of transition from end-time tribulation on the church to end-time tribulation on this world. The last three thunders are a direct part of that transition. The fifth thunder is death.
And I'll just say right here, what's happened here has been minimal. See, even these, in part, have happened in an orderly fashion. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Where are we right now?
4.
But all of them have had some thundering. And the only ones that could hear any of that, it's us, God's people. Because the things we're talking about from this point, especially forward, have more to do with some things about the environs of the church. But far away. They're not so far away anymore.
The fifth thunder is death. The first three thunders obviously include a marked increase in death from the escalation of worldwide devastation. This thunder is an addition to that destruction and will occur in a specific manner. The fifth thunder is divided into three specific phases of death. The first phase is death within the church of God that was scattered. It will be specifically about a marked increase in the death of its leadership, the ministry. The second phase, and again, that's only been in the distance, in small ways, nothing compared to what this is talking about here. The second phase will be a sudden escalation in the death of notable people in the world. The third phase will be a sudden escalation in the death in the world from plagues. The first phase, talking about the first phase here, of this fifth thunder has already begun in a very small way upon the church of God that was scattered after the prophesied apostasy. And again, I'm not going to go through and read all this. You've read it. You can go through and read it again if you want, some of the point. Because I talk about a first phase, the second phase, and a third phase. And these are not pleasant things people are going to go through and we're going to see around us and things that take place. But they're going to be notable in the fact that they fulfill these things just as much as number four is very much in all the news and has been for some time now. These things, too, are going to come along more powerfully. The sixth thunder. This thunder also concerns both the church and the world. Right at page 109, it started very small with the publication of my first book, The Prophesied End Time. The content of that book is strong concerning the announcement of prophesied end time events that have already begun. But the pronouncement that I am an end time prophet is a declaration that will have profound significance for God's church. The growing manifestation of proof that I am God's end time prophet and that I am the spokesman of His two end time witnesses is a thunder that will become powerfully stronger all the way up until the very return of Jesus Christ. And obviously, that sound is pretty small right now, except in the church, except for those whom that God has called. And that's why there's this transition from that which is spiritual that concerns the church, which is always going to be a part in the forefront, because that's God's primary focus, it's the church, and those He's going to add to the church over the next 3.5 years. The sixth thunder is a growing revelation of God's end-time witness. This revelation is that I am the spokesman of God's two end-time prophets, the spokesman of His two end-time witnesses. God has given me a job of declaring His witness of man to man as part of the beginning an end to man's self-rule and the establishing of His kingdom, His government on earth. You know, we can't even begin to grasp what's ahead of us, what God's going to do and why God's doing it, and the power and the magnitude that God's going to do it in. But we need to be spiritually ready, and even more ready than we are right now. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next Sabbath. The seventh thunder. The revelation of this last thunder will be covered in far greater depth in the last chapter. This last thunder, as with the previous two thunders, concerns the church and the world. See? The seventh thunder is an accelerated revelation of God to man. Now, I can't wait for this one to take on greater magnitude and greater power. You know, as God pours out more of His Spirit on the earth because of things happening, because that's the system, that's the way in which things are going to be done, because it's a matter of, do we understand the process of what has to take place? People have to be humbled first. People have to be brought low first. People have to have a desire to find something different, a desire to look, a desire. You know, a lot of you that are new, that came along, different stories that are out there about what it was that stirred you up, why something finally just came into your mind of things that were happening in your life, and then you went searching for whatever words on the internet, or someone came along and said something to you, and you came across a book, and then all of a sudden your mind was open and you were able to see. To think that what we've experienced so far, which to me is an awesome thing. I remember Mr. Armstrong talking about 30% growth a year, year after year after year in the church, and how incredible that was, and how others tried to diminish from that, tried to tear some of those things apart, and yet the evidence was there. And I think what we've gone through in the past year, and to realize that's nothing. We're in a time where that's absolutely nothing. But it's been exciting. We've learned some great lessons through all of this. Yeah. Some mighty lessons. We've just gone through, I was editing some of the lectures for the elders that I hadn't finished yet. And one of them is going to be put up this week. Maybe both of them this week, hopefully. of the last two that have to do with the guidelines that were given. And going through that, I'm just absolutely dumbfounded at what God's teaching us and what God has taught us in knowing how to better work with people, where we are in time, things we're addressing in a different way than we would have in times past because of the focus we have to have now. The focus is different for God's church than it ever has been because it's all about new people. But it's also about new people being able to give them the maximum of what we can while we can. And it's a matter of leading people to that. But it's up to every person, just like leading a horse to water. You know, you can lead them to water, but they've got to drink. You've got to want it. And that's our job. You know, God is letting us lead people in different ways. The internet, the advertising that's taking place out there, it's available. But it takes people being shaken to the core of their being to really start to change. And that's how God is going to work in the next few months in an increasing way. And that just magnifies thousands of times over, where more and more people are going to be able to be drawn, but they can't until they're humbled by these different stages of things that happen through thunders and that happen through trumpets. And to me, it's exciting because it helps us to be focused on something that's exciting. We're going through bad times, we're going through difficult times, but it's going to be encouraging because it's about other people that God is calling and drawing and the ability to help them. You know, there's nothing, you have not experienced anything like this yet in your life. You never have. You've never remotely experienced anything like this in your life. If you can begin to grasp and begin to imagine when people are suffering all around you, and I mean suffer. You know, to be without your job is one thing. To wonder how you're going to go down to the store and buy your next, get your groceries. You know, is the government going to be able to continue having money and help here? And what happens when some of that runs out and the time runs out and the, you know, and all the things that people sometimes go through in life when it comes down to some of these things, even just on an economic scale. And to come to a point in time when there is no money, when there is no grocery store, you have not lived in that kind of a time. There's not a one of you who has lived in a time where there are no grocery stores, where there are no trucks going across the country carrying food so that you can guarantee, or being able to go out to eat at a restaurant. Boy, is life going to change? Are we going to look at things totally differently? Put yourself in that environment and to understand that you have something to give that's worth so much more than their physical sustenance. God will take care and God will provide for people and bring people through it and the things that are going to take place, but to grasp that in the most difficult of times of human history, that you have the ability to share with them hope and truth that God's going to put into their minds to help them to see and to know that it's true. Just as much as different ones that some of you have been around for some time and you see new people come along and you see that excitement of all of a sudden they've read a book, they've read two books, they're coming to Sabbath services, they've changed their whole life, they've changed things about this, you know, what they're doing, the day they're observing, they put away the things of this world in an accelerated way. We have never experienced this in God's church. They didn't experience this in the time of Christ after he died. Sometimes I think we think they did because of the 3,000 that were called in one day. Judaism back then was a whole lot different from what it is today. And they had there were people who had some things planted in their minds before that. People that were baptized by John before that. You know, different things that had happened in some people's lives, of things that were already working in their life. That wasn't just something that happened all of a sudden, you know. And when their minds were opened up to understand certain truths, and it happened, yes, it happened quickly. But we have never experienced a time like this, where people have been able to have access to so much and be able to hear and learn so much so quickly. It truly is dumbfounding. And to recognize how valuable that is in the future for you when you can share that with others, when they don't have the ability to go to the internet. Yeah, we don't know how long that's going to last. Maybe it'll last up to the fifth trumpet. What an amazing thing. I think about that often. I think about when will that fifth trumpet go off? You know, something that stresses me a little bit sometimes because of what happened back in June is that for the sake of the church, in some ways, I wish it were soon. But I hope we have learned our lesson in a very great way so that we don't slip and so we don't stumble.
And so we recognize the dangerous ground we were on. I cannot tell you enough how dangerous a ground we were on back in June. I think there are a lot of people who don't really believe that yet, who don't understand that fully yet. But as a church, we were on very dangerous ground. We truly were. There were things about ourselves that God had to reveal to us about ourselves and where we were spiritually, and to realize how strong Laodicea, that spirit, that mind, which, by the way, we're out of Laodicea, but we still have Laodicea to fight. That's our human nature. It's the age we live in. So again, ask God to help you to grasp, to begin to grasp more deeply, more fully what it's going to be like of what you have to share with people, the truth you have inside of you. Because God's going to use that in a very powerful way to be able to share what you have with others. And you're going to experience things that are going to be so inspiring, so exciting, in some of the worst of times of human history. But you'll be excited. It's hard to understand until you're living it. Ask God to help you to see that more, because it is exciting. And so there are many things that have to humble a lot of people. There are going to be some horrifying things to go through that aren't just in the trumpets that go off. You know what takes place in some port cities before long? What takes place in some of the places in this nation? There are going to be some other things come along as well. Some horrifying things that have to do with diseases and illnesses and sicknesses that have nothing to do with the trumpets, but everything to do with thunders. Because God's going to humble human beings, very powerfully so. So again, God has not revealed himself to most of mankind. Only a few throughout the past 6 millennia have been able to come to know God. Those few who did come to know God were rejected by the rest of mankind. We're still witness of that. You have been witness of that in the past year in a powerful way. And God let us experience that. And God let us have our noses rubbed into it a little bit to know what it feels like. And to realize this is not about pride. This is not about us, me, you, being made right in front of somebody else. We had to learn that. And how many times was that repeated in the church over and over again in people's lives? This isn't a matter about you looking good and about something happening on a certain date. Instead, God let everything be moved along 8 months up the road so that things so many of us said come back at us. And how do we receive it? Do we receive it in humility and let the world grovel? That's not the right word. The world relish in their... they weren't groveling, were they? Relish in their delight about you squirming, about you and what you had said to them perhaps. And sometimes because of a certain zeal maybe we had in saying some things and maybe learning some lessons through that next time around, I want to say these things a little differently. You know, I'm going to be careful how I phrase things. And it's not a matter of pride. It's not a matter of us being made right. On the contrary, God let us learn what people have had to go through, but in an intense way. That's a blessing. That's a gift from God. That God let us experience in an intensified way what people have had to go through for long periods of time in their life. Only of recent time have I come to, I've grown in that, but I've really, really come to see it powerfully so. Things Mr. Armstrong was living and going through in his life that I never even began to grasp. It's hard to grasp what that man went through for years and years and years fighting for God's way of life, fighting for the church, fighting against those who would rise up within the church, within the leadership of the church, men of department heads who once they received that recognition and they were there for a time, that it went to their heads and they began to want to change things and thought they had the right to change things. After all, he's an old man and he doesn't know what's going on out here. You know, he doesn't know how to reach out to the world today. His time was back in the 30s and the 40s. He doesn't understand the world today. That's how they talked. He doesn't understand how to reach out to the Protestant world. We've got to use different terminology in the Plain Truth magazine. And blah, 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 blah. And he had to fight those things. He had wars on his hands that we don't even comprehend. You know, torn up, one side and down the other. He had to fight some lonely battles, especially after Loma died. Because who on earth could he share this with? Who was it that he could go to and share it with? The evangelists? No, that's where his battles were. Department heads? No, that's where his battles were. That's where they were coming from. We're going to learn in the future things that we don't even begin to, we haven't been given to us yet, as far as knowledge and understanding of some of those kinds of things of what went on. There were a lot of nasty things went on for a lot of years, and he fought, and he fought, and he fought. Incredible. And that's the way every one of us should be, to fight for what is true, to fight for what is right, to fight in our own life to make sure that things are done, the principles and truths of God are applied in righteousness and in truth with others, toward others. That we do everything we can with all of our being toward God, that we ask God for the help to do it because we know we're incapable of it. We can't do it. God has to do it in us, through us, to give us the ability and the power to do things right. Simple things. Of not embarrassing one another, of not saying something in front of someone else to someone about a matter, because we don't want to hurt anyone. Do you hurt inside that you never want to say anything about anyone to anyone else in God's church because you don't want to cause anyone any harm? You know, I marvel how that happens so often in God's church. How people are willing to say something out of jealousy, out of envy, out of anger, out of whatever it is about someone else. And I think, do we not grasp where we are? Do we not grasp what God has given to us? Do we not grasp who we are before God? And the last thing we should ever want to do is see any hurt come to anyone in the body. Do we burn inside with that kind of desire, you know, before God? Those are things we have to ask, isn't it? And when we haven't learned those lessons, God lets us learn some things the hard way. You know, because that should be our burning desire, not to see anybody ever hurt in God's church. It tears me up when I see people get hurt. It really does. Yeah. It makes me angry sometimes. Not with the wrong kind of anger either, I might add. But a righteous indignation. Because there are things of judgment that we sometimes don't realize what we've done to someone else in God's church. And I thank God that way back, about 1987, 1988, he helped me to start learning that lesson very powerfully so I didn't take things personally when people would say things about me. You know, it's like God had to tell Samuel, it's not about you. It's about me. Yeah. It's not you they're fighting. It's me. And so when you're snapped to it, you realize it's about a battle toward God. And so when we see someone else in the church, when someone's done something wrong, please understand, if it's toward you or something that's been said toward you or about you, understand, it's not you. It's a spiritual thing. It's a battle, and your hope and your desire should be for them that they conquer that. That they overcome that they're able to see that and repent of that so they can be right with God, because you don't want to see anybody go by the wayside. I was talking services here just a moment earlier about someone. It was someone up in Canada in a particular area that they went by the wayside. They chose not to be a part of us anymore because of the 50th truth. They couldn't make it through that. They couldn't make it. I don't think they even made it to the 50th truth. But anyway, they just couldn't do it anymore. And I thought, after all these years, after all the fighting and the battling, and just to throw it away now? Well, at least it's not ringing. I just hear the vibration of the phone. But it's a loud one. But that's a whole lot better than ringing. That's usually in Cincinnati. Oh, they got to charge out that there in the front row. But anyway... our modern technology. But anyway, I hope we all feel like that. I hope we're learning those lessons and more powerfully so, and putting things in a proper perspective of where we are in time and how we should think toward each other, how people should love each other. You know, those are the most basic truths that God gives to us in the church, and yet they seem to be the
longest to learn. You know? The longest to learn. Anyway, how to love each other. That's what it's all about. No prejudice. Can you say in your mind you have no prejudice toward any other human being? Can you say in your heart and mind you have no jealousy toward anyone? Because if you do, you've got sin in your hands. If you have a prejudice, if you have a jealousy, if you have an envy, sometimes we don't realize that that's what it is, though. Sometimes you know what it takes? It takes some hardship, some trial, something to bring it to the surface so that we can even see what's in our heart and what's in our mind. See? Our desire should be for each other that's in the church. If you have God's Spirit, our desire should be toward everyone that has God's Spirit to want to see them succeed, to want to see them make it, and to be willing to forgive and forget anything and everything. Yeah? Is that so hard to do? Sometimes it is, sadly, isn't it? Anyway, we're ever learning those things, aren't we? We need to draw closer to God, much closer to God, because we've never had a time like we're getting ready to be launched into quickly. And it's going to be very difficult and very hard. And we need each other. You need the strength that comes from knowing each other, from having known each other. There are going to be some situations where you're not going to be able to be around each other. But you're going to be able to remember those times you had when you were together in a congregation or at a holy day or whatever it might be. And those times are going to become far more precious in your mind and in your heart and in your being. And you're going to be able to think about those times, say, and to realize the value of others who are coming along, to be able to share with them the truth and the fellowship that you might have in whatever way that God allows you to have in the future here. Anyway, going on. If I can find my place again, I'll just jump back into the paragraph here. God has not revealed himself to most of mankind. Only a few throughout the past 6 millennia have been able to come to know God. Those few who did come to know God were rejected by the rest of mankind. The prophets and apostles were rejected by man. Therefore, man was not able to know God. Yet, even these servants of God did not address the entirety of mankind. God taught his ways to only one nation in Moses' time. But most of that nation rejected his words. The history of man, the true witness of man, is that man does not want God's ways. Man has not wanted God to govern his life. So in the past 6,000 years, God has called a very few into a special relationship with him in order to be taught and trained for a future world ruling government, the kingdom of God that will be established over all the earth at the return of Jesus Christ. I am so glad we're there. Much of this has already been explained, but it needs to be understood that God is getting ready to do what he has never done before with mankind. God is getting ready to reveal himself to the entirety of mankind, those who will receive it. Sadly, most have to die. And people don't like hearing that. They don't like hearing that. You know why? Because they're indignant. They don't understand God. They don't know God. And they want to hold on to something they think is pretty good. Doesn't matter what religion it is, they think it's pretty good. This revelation is similar to thunder. It has already begun to sound within his church. It's about to sound powerfully throughout the world. That's why I think back to 2005 and the feast a lot of times. Thinking about things that God has given to us. Things right now when you go through the New Testament, I don't care what scriptures you read, and it's so powerful. It just jumps out at you, and it's like, how on earth could we have ever seen anything different? But until it's God's time to give it to all, we can't see it. Powerful, powerful, powerful to realize there's only been one God throughout all eternity, one being through all eternity who is God. And yet we didn't know that a few years ago as a church. Incredible. Do we understand those truths that God has given to us? I'm not talking about prophetic truths. I'm talking about things that are absolutely clear and powerful in Scripture that should give you great strength. Going on, it's already begun to sound within his church. It is about to sound powerfully throughout the world as his two witnesses grow in power, as all of God's prophesied end-time events begin to unfold in an ever-increasing manner. As this process progresses, God will continue to reveal himself more fully. God's revelation to mankind will continue to accelerate as we draw closer to the end of man's rulership and the coming of Jesus Christ to rule over all the earth. I marvel at these things, brother, and I really do. I don't care how often we go through it. I truly marvel where we are in time and to realize that what God is doing and the power he's going to do it in and how he's going to let certain things progress as they're going to all the way up to the very end and then finally intervene to do what he's going to do on one day to finally humble all the earth. Anyway, with that, we'll stop for today. I hope we truly understand that it's a little deja vu in some respects, but today we see things going on around us that are far more powerful than they were 8 months ago, and I hope we understand it, and I hope we see it, and hang in there firmly, and look forward to next week's fasting for the church, and try to enter into it in a way you've never entered into a fast. Ask God to help you enter this fast uniquely so. Ask him to give you insight and understanding in a very powerful way of why we need it as a church, why I, speaking of each one of us praying to God, need it individually, myself, your prayer, in other words, to God. Asking for help, that you be able to see more powerfully, more clearly so, why you need to be stirred up more in God's Spirit. And to enter, do you know the primary reason for entering into a fast? Do you know one of the main things that you do in a fast? Well, you humble yourself before God. It is about humility, yes. But do you know what is behind all that humility? What the purpose of it is? Repentance. Seeking to change. Seeking to draw closer to God. We need to do that very powerfully so, because what we're getting ready to enter into is going to drain your being, and you will not be able to stand without the power and might of Almighty God living and dwelling within you more than it is today.